Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm Soundcheck producer Joel Meyer, in this week for John Schaefer, and I am so relaxed. So relaxed. I've been listening to dozens and dozens of song picks that we've compiled into a playlist called simply The Most Relaxing Playlist Ever. It's on soundcheck.org right now. And you see, all this week, we've been asking you for your relaxing songs, and we've received a bunch of great ideas, like this one.
Since I die without you. Since I die without you.
Lisa Wilkerson, my sweet song would be PM Dawn. I think it's I Die Without You, and I'm from Harlem, New York.
PM Dawn. Now there is a group that makes me kick back. I mean, you can't see it, but right now I'm lying on the floor of the studio, wearing a kimono, I've got headphones on, there are candles lit. Okay, not really, but we did compile your song picks into one gigantic, ultra-relaxing playlist that you can find on soundcheck.org. And later on the show, I'm going to unveil some of our favorites among the picks you sent us. Also on the show...
My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard, and they're like, it's better than yours, damn right, it's better than yours, I could teach you, but I have to charge my milkshake brings...
The R&B singer Khalees broke out in 2003 with this top 10 hit called Milkshake. And then, Khalees went to culinary school. Her latest album is called Food, and it features songs with titles like Cobbler, Friday Fish Fry, and Jerk Ribs. So, Khalees is going to play some of those songs, and this singer-turned-chef-turned-singer will talk with Dan Pashman, host of the food podcast, The Sporkful. But first...
Come.
Boy George became a global pop music icon in the 1980s as the frontman of this English band, Culture Club, known for hits like Karma Chameleon, I'll Tumble For You, and Do You Really Want to Hurt Me? Culture Club also was known for exploring relatively uncharted territory in fashion and makeup. Now, since then, Boy George has launched a second career as a well-traveled club DJ. But during the 2000s, he struggled with a drug problem, two high-profile arrests, and a short stint in jail. He sobered up in 2008, and now he's just released his first album of all new material in 18 years. And it's great. It's called This Is What I Do. Boy George, before we talk about the record, let me be the first person to wish you a happy St. George's Day.
Thank you. Thank you.
now, we're taping this on St. George's Day. I'm going to admit I don't really know what St. George's Day is. Can you explain?
No, I don't really know what St. George's Day is either. I think it's kind of like... nationalism. I know they have the flags with the sort of white and the red. And I think I have done a post on Facebook with me with the white face and the red flag. But generally, I just like St. George because he's called George.
Right. I mean, it is an English holiday, but it's probably special to you.
And there's lots of pubs called St. George.
Aha. Okay. All right. Well, they're probably celebrating in their own special way.
Absolutely.
All right.
Without me.
Well, let's talk about the new album. It's called This Is What I Do. And the track that I want to play for people before we get too far into the conversation is called King of Everything. It just kicks off with a really killer first line. All right. So I want to play that for everybody, and then we'll come back and talk about it.
Down the booze, let the demons win the fight. I drop my gloves to the ground. You know I'm sorry for the times I made you cry. I made an order letting you down. Used to say it's only me I'm hurting, but
so you won't stay. The kid was crying and the dogs were howling and a siren filled the air. What's the word on the street? Have I lost my crown?
That is the lead-off track from Boy George's new album, This Is What I Do. It's called King of Everything. And, George, as we heard the first line of the song, put down the booze, let the demons win the fight, drop my gloves to the ground, you know I'm sorry for the times I made you cry. You're really coming out with a pretty strong statement. And, you know, I started out the interview by pointing out this is your first album of all new material in almost 20 years. And if we went back, you know, Not too many years ago, I wasn't sure that there was going to be another Boy George album of all new material. You know, we've heard about battles with drugs and alcohol, legal problems, things like that. Is this part of recovery for you? You've been sober since 2008 to start the album with that kind of strong statement?
Well, I don't think it was kind of thought out in that way. I don't think you ever really sit down and think, okay, this is what I'm, you know, you're just kind of doing what you do and you write. I mean, what I try to do is put as much of myself into what I do as possible, because all of my favorite artists like Joni Mitchell, Dylan, Leonard Cohen, all those sort of writers who kind of inspire me to kind of be more honest and more real, really. So that's what I'm aiming for. But also you have to remember that it's also a song, you know. So, you know, you start off maybe writing about yourself, but then it kind of takes corners and, you know, you think about how it's going to sound on the radio, or, you know, you're trying to make a 3-minute movie. You know what I mean? So in a way, it's a filmic song, you know, and I was never a drinker. So it's that bit's not about me, but it's just about all addiction.
Mm-hmm.
It's about addiction, and it's about kind of, you know, climbing back, reclaiming your life, really. I mean, I suppose in a way, what I've learned in my life is that the most important thing to be is a successful human being. And everything else kind of comes from that. You know, if you're the most successful person in the world, and we have many examples of that in our lives, if you don't have sort of happiness in your personal life, it doesn't really matter how much money you're making or how successful you are. It doesn't mean a thing. So, you know, I've been on a long journey to get to this realization. Hey, you can be happy. Hey.
Well, you know, sometimes some artists might say that it's difficult to be creative and make a great record like this when you are happy.
Rubbish. I think it's much easier to do everything when you're sober, you know, including crossing the road, you know, making sure you shower regularly. I mean, all of that sort of basic stuff comes from clarity. I mean, and for me as an artist, I think, yeah, I'm sure there are people who do great stuff when they're in a mess. And I think it's more that you think you're doing great stuff when you're in a mess.
I'm taking notes. Shower regularly equals success.
That's
good.
Absolutely. You know, cleanliness is next to godliness. Didn't your mother tell you that?
I'm talking to Boy George about his new album, This Is What I Do. I'm Joel Meyer, sitting in on Soundcheck today for John Schaefer. He's out this week. Unfortunately, he really wanted to be here.
Oh.
But he's missing out on what I think is a really terrific record. I really enjoyed listening to it. And looking at some of the reviews. Now, I don't know if you do that, if you look at reviews of your own work. One thing that caught my eye, Caroline Sullivan at The Guardian called this album the comeback of the year. Just a very simple, very bold phrase. How do you feel about the word comeback?
Well, it's a word that's been used a lot, you know, in my career, you know, because I guess when you have dips in your career, then, you know, everything you do is considered a comeback. And I think at the moment, you know, it's amazing how many people don't know I've got a record out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think in this current culture, you have to kind of literally bleed under people's doors, you know, arrive with their milk. You know, I don't know how you do it, but I just think it's a funny old time because we have so much stuff to aid us to communicate. You know, everyone's on their phones. You go on the subway or the bus, whatever, everyone's on the internet,
mm-hmm.
but no one really knows anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the non-information age that we live in. It's incredible.
But, so do you have a plan for overcoming that, for bleeding under people's doors?
I think you just have to keep sort of turning up and, you know, sort of. I think really these days, you know, because people don't have the same sort of careers they used to have. They don't exist anymore. I mean, yeah, you've got, you know, artists like Gaga and Miley Cyrus who seem to be everywhere, but that's more for the pop kids. You know, you have to be a certain age to have that kind of career. For someone like me, it's a whole different thing. And I think everything you do matters. Like, we did a live show last night in New York, which was awesome. We were on tour at the moment. And, you know, all of it matters. It's all like a big kind of, like a raw pie chart.
Uh-huh. Live shows, TV, your digital plan.
Your hat, you know.
Your hat.
Showering.
Showering. The shower plan. I'm good that that's like, you've
all
got that,
that
locked
stuff.
Down.
Yeah, I mean, I think live is the key thing because, you know, live is the one place where only you can be you. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of bands are finding now that that's the place where they're at their most powerful. And certainly that seems to be the case for me.
Sure. You know, you were talking a little bit before about some pop icons. You mentioned Lady Gaga. There's an artist whose song you cover on this album who has done a really great job of being a very provocative, maybe controversial artist, very magnetic artist, Lana Del Rey. You cover her song Video Games, which is how I think a lot of people, that was their first introduction to Lana Del Rey. What do you like about her?
Well, I mean, I like the fact that she's kind of channeling the sort of 50s, you know, the sort of poo-poopy-doo kind of thing. To me, she's a bit like sort of Roy Orbison meets Marilyn Monroe. There's that kind of wonderful androgyny to her voice. You know, it's not the voice you expect to come out of that face.
Sure.
The first time I saw her on TV, I was like...
You don't expect a voice to come out of that face
because
you expect it just to be on Vogue.
I just thought, she's too pretty. She can't be talented.
Yes.
And then suddenly she starts singing. And I think I like... Video Games because it reminded me of The Crying Game. You know, it's not an obvious bombastic pop song, but it sticks in your cranium. Once you've heard it, you know, it doesn't do all the usual things that pop songs do. You know what I mean? There isn't this massive chorus. It kind of drifts and it's quite breezy. But somehow I just thought it was, and I just wanted to sing, you know, putting on your favorite sundress.
The connection to The Crying Game, which is a special movie for you, that is, I hadn't thought about that, but that's interesting.
It's very similar, you know, because when you hear The Crying Game, originally when I first heard that song, which was played to me by the Pet Shop Boys, I was like, it's not really a pop song. You know, I couldn't see it really. And then once they got their hands on it and started doing their kind of magic, you know, trickery, it was like, wow, this is a great song. And I think... writing those kind of songs is difficult. Write those songs a bit like Slave to Love or Avalon by Roxy, or even Where Are We Now by Bowie. It doesn't hang in all the right places. And that's quite inspiring to me as a writer, you know, not to have to kind of hit people over the head with an endless chorus, which I'm good at. You know?
Well, let's hear the song that got us talking about The Crying Game. This comes from Boy George's new album, This Is What I Do. The song is Video Games, a cover of the song by Lana Del Rey. Here's Boy George.
Swinging in the backyard, pull up in your fast car, whistling my name. Open up a beer and you say, get over here and play video game. I'm in his favorite sundress, watching me get undressed, take the body downtown. I see you're the bestest, leaning for a big kiss, put his favorite perfume on. Go play a video game. It's you, it's you, it's all for you. Everything I do, I tell you all the time. Heaven is a place on earth with you. Tell me all the things you wanna do. I hear that you like for bad girls, huh?
The song Video Games, a cover of the song by Lana Del Rey. It's sung by Boy George, and it appears on his new album, This Is What I Do. I'm Joel Meyer in today for John Schaefer on Soundcheck, and I'm joined by Boy George in the studio. A very nice cover. I want to say, George, your voice sounds wonderful on this record, but it does not sound like Boy George Circa Culture Club. Your voice has really changed. Can you talk about trying to get that instrument sort of into shape for your this new record?
Well, for me, the big thing was giving up smoking, because for a long time I thought, oh, it makes me sound jazzy. And it did for a minute. I have to say it was quite effective. Then it was like, this is not great. And so I gave up smoking and, you know, sort of started to kind of train a bit and started to get fit. And not really because I was making a record, just because I needed to. You know, I was kind of out of shape.
Well, what is the regimen? I mean, you look great. People are commenting on the awesome beard that you have. So, and I want to say the beard looks good.
Some people like it. Some people really don't.
I think it's cool. I'm working the mustache right now, and when you have a mustache, people just kind of go like, hey, you have a mustache.
Well, one
it's
of the great things
statement.
About the beard is that for some reason I'm attracting lots of beards to my shows. So it's like there's this influx of bearded people. It's great. So I feel like I'm part of an international beard society. It's amazing. For me, it was just really exercising and eating. I'm pretty much raw vegan.
Okay.
And one of the great things about being in New York is you have some fantastic raw restaurants in New York. The best. So I would love to kind of live here and just live on raw food. It would be amazing. But, you have to watch what you eat, really. Eat less, move more. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's basically it. Do you
have a favorite restaurant that you go to here in New York? Do you have a go-to?
Well, there's two places. There's a place called Pure Food and Wine, mm-hmm. and then Lucky Duck, which is the takeaway. And then there's a place called Rocking Raw on near Jane.
All right.
Very good.
And you get the 10% beard discount as well.
No, no. There's this thing. Listen. Lucky Duck, there's this thing. It's like a raw vegan mint sundae. It's not cheap, but it is worth it.
How much is it?
Like $16. But it's $16 of utter bliss. I've sent so many people to have this thing. Don't have anything else. Just have that. It's incredible.
Well, for $16, it's all I'm going to be having.
And just flick your hair and say, I'm worth it.
All right. Another thing that I kept coming back to when I was listening to the record called This Is What I Do is that there is just reggae all over this record. I kept, track to track, it would sort of go away and come back and be another reggae track. And in reading some of the analysis of the record, people keep pointing out reggae was a really big part of Culture Club as well, too. And I, as someone that was a little kid when Culture Club was in full swing, I was not paying attention to the reggae feel of Culture Club. It was just great dance music.
Yeah.
How important is reggae to you from those early days?
Well, I think the reggae that I did with Culture Club was a little bit whiter. And mm-hmm. I think with this record, it's a little bit more authentic reggae. But I've always loved reggae. I, grew up in London. There's a lot of Jamaicans in London. So I've grown up with reggae in my life, from a kid. And in fact, one of the songs I do live is Everything I Own by Bread. I originally heard that in 1973 as a reggae record. Yeah, by this guy called Ken Booth. And I didn't know it was a Bread song. So when I recorded it, people were like, that's a Bread song. And I was like, who are Bread? Obviously, now I've heard the Bread version. It's beautiful, but we do the reggae version live.
And people just told you, like, Bread is just they're a great reggae trio from Kingston.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You sheltered me from harm, kept me warm, kept me warm. You gave my life to me, set me free. You set me free. Of all the years I ever knew, those final ones I spent with you, I would give everything I own, give up my life, my heart, my own. I would
reggae, it's a sunshine music. I like it. It's a bit like country in the sense that it has its own world. And if we're into it, fine. If we're not, it still carries on.
It's an interesting connection between reggae and country, two worlds that many people won't draw a line between.
Well, in Jamaica, one of the biggest artists is Charlie Pride. and they love country. And in fact, if you explore it a little bit, there is a very strong connection between country and reggae. They are brothers.
That sounds like a future soundcheck segment to me here on the show, drawing the line between reggae and country. Let's hear one of the songs that really caught my ear when I was listening to the record, This Is What I Do by Boy George. The song is called Live Your Life.
Everybody knew the boy was strange. They raised him in whispers, oh how they prayed. The demons would go away. His daddy was cruel, he tried to make him tough. Always afraid to give him too much love. Too much love. Running, running, running. What a waste of time. Knowing you can be what you could say. Bigotry and hatred. And too much lies. Now is the time to live your life.
Live Your Life is a track from Boy George's new album, This Is What I Do. You're hearing it here on Soundcheck. Boy George is our guest. I'm Joel Meyer, sitting in for John Schaefer. You know, after Culture Club, DJing became a really big part of your life, George. I wanted to find out what was behind that transition. What did DJing give you that being on stage and making records couldn't?
Well, it was kind of after the demise of Culture Club, and in the UK, we weren't getting played on the radio. You know, the whole new wave of boy bands, New Kids on the Block, Take That, all of that started to happen. So the landscape changed, and Acid House happened in the UK, which was this kind of sort of version of American house, you know, the Detroit, Chicago house that came to Europe, and people just flipped out. So we took your American dance music and went completely crazy to it for about 10 years.
And you seem to do that over and over and over throughout the decades.
Well, I think even in the 70s, there are a lot of examples of, like, artists that were huge in the UK that no one knows in America, you know. And the Acid House thing was just so exciting, and I just started to go to the clubs and got immersed in that. And then one thing led to another. I ended up sort of playing sort of, you know, in the back room of a rave, and then that sort of turned into other gigs. But I DJed before Culture Club as well, okay, in 1979, so I had a brief stint of being a DJ. So I just went back to that, you know, and it's been an incredible second career for me, and I still do it. You know, I'm off to Kentucky in 2 weeks to DJ, and I shall be back over here DJing all the time.
So tell us then, what are a couple of things that you're listening to or that you spin when you DJ that we should know about?
DJ-wise, I love this artist called Loco Dice. There's this track called Detox, which is one of my favorite records. It's very subtle. It's as far away from EDM as you can possibly get. It's very understated, groovy. I like kind of groovy, understated music. And there's another artist called Dawley, who I absolutely love. And I do a podcast once a month for free on iTunes called Club Culture, so you can hear what I do for nothing.
We can provide a link to that on soundcheck.org. Yeah. Huh, that is very interesting. What do you think about EDM? Are you comfortable getting as far away from EDM as you possibly can?
Well, it's a weird one because, you know, obviously, as I said earlier, when I started playing house music, it was the kind of authentic kind of Chicago, Frankie Knuckles, Detroit thing. And this EDM thing feels very European. It's a weird one. Mm-hmm. It feels like America has braced, in a sense, kind of the worst aspect of dance music when you have this incredible kind of, you know, original house sound. But having DJed around America last year, there is an appetite for no EDM.
Uh-huh.
There are people who want to hear,
I agree,
bass lines, and, you know, they don't want to hear the breakdown, you know, where everyone takes a selfie and drops their chihuahua, you know, people.
Well, Boy George, maybe what can happen is, you know, EDM can get really huge here in the U.S., and then we'll just send it over across the pond to you.
Unfortunately,
and the U.K. can improve it.
We have it. It's everywhere. It's literally everywhere, you know. All you see in the U.K. are, like, kind of bottles of champagne with sparklers, you know, everywhere, and the sound of Europe.
Well, there's a very different sound on Boy George's new album, This Is What I Do. I love it. I think it's something that that people should check out. Boy George, thank you so much for being on Soundcheck today.
Thank you.
Here's my coffee cup. Too much boy, not enough love. Your tailors never went away. Feels like they took a holiday. Feel the vibration.
Up next, singer-songwriter Khalise is best known for her pop hits like Milkshake and Bossy. She's back with a new album that's a soulful reinvention, and we'll hear some of it live in our studio. This is Soundcheck.
You can't escape the grips of desire.
This is Soundcheck. I'm producer Joel Meyer, in this week for John Schaefer. Earlier this year at South by Southwest, music festival goers might have been surprised to see a familiar face handing out jerk ribs and duck confit from a food truck. It was Khalise, the musician behind huge hits like Milkshake and Bossy. But this was no fluke. Khalise's new album is called Food, and in it she seamlessly blends her training as a professional chef with some pretty soulful music. Khalise is here with her band in the Soundcheck studio today, kicking off a live session with the song Friday Fish Fry.
She needs ice cold water.
That's Kalise with her song Friday Fish Fry. You heard band members Dexter Story on piano, Deja Gomez on background vocals, Todd Simon on the trumpet, and Brittany Brooks behind our drum kit. Now, normally here on Soundcheck, this is the part where John Schaefer sits down with our musical guest for an interview. But with John out this week, we thought we'd do something a little different. As I mentioned before, Kalise has more than a passing interest in the culinary arts, so we thought we'd ask our friend Dan Pashman, host of the food podcast The Sporkful, if he'd like to talk to Kalise. And he started things off by asking Kalise about combining those two passions.
You are a trained chef, in addition to being an incredibly successful musician, but it's much more, this is not a gimmick, you've actually been cooking jerk ribs all morning.
Yes, I have been, actually, yeah. I don't have enough patience for gimmicks, so I'm not one of those. So we have an event tonight, and, you know, just being in New York is great, so it's kind of, you know, I mean, it is my hometown, it's my stomping ground. So, we partnered up, and someone's let me in their kitchen, and, you know, I'm cooking, because we've got a food service tonight, kind of before the show, so...
Right, and I mean, you had a food truck at South by Southwest. Yes. You were serving jerk ribs. Have you gotten to the point where you're like, maybe this was, maybe the food themed album? I didn't realize I was gonna have to cook quite so many ribs.
Well, it's definitely a lot. You know, it's a lot. I think it's not even so much the actual work of cooking. It's more so, I think I'm in a very different mental place when I'm cooking. And, you know, it's one thing to know that I'm working and I'm promoting an album and I'm putting an album out. And so you're kind of prepared for that because I've been doing that for so long. I know what that is. So to add food to it, which is a very, you know, it's a very personal thing. It's kind of, I find myself like, okay, snap out of it. You know, which happens a lot, actually.
Right. I find that cooking can almost sort of be a meditative thing.
It is. And, you know, it's funny because I was talking to my manager actually at South by Southwest and, you know, you get used to doing all this press. I'm 15 years in now, so I'm like, you know, I'm used to doing the press, you know, gearing up for a record. And people wanted to come into the kitchen and talk to me, which I find absolutely the most irritating thing in the world. And I don't want to talk to you. And I'm like, I have a really bad attitude right now. And I'm like, why do I feel this way? I was like, this is so weird. I'm so not used to people talking to me. I'm like, don't talk to me. Right. I'm busy. Yeah. I'm like, and I could do that for hours. I mean, like, hours can go by. And I'm cooking. I'm like, fine, in silence.
Right. So before this album came out, you actually spent, you trained as a saucier at Le Cordon Bleu, one of the top culinary schools in the world.
Yeah.
How long were you training there?
I went the full term. So I was there, it's like about a year, I think.
Was there at any point where you thinking, maybe this is just my new direction, maybe I'm not going back to music?
Well, I mean, I've always loved food. I've always loved cooking. My mom had a catering business growing up, so food has always been a huge part of my life. I'm kind of an all or nothing person, so I think at the time, it was sort of just like, this is what I'm doing right now, and this is all I need to be doing because I'm enjoying it so much. But I actually think that it ended up being, you know, in me taking a break from music, it ended up being something that really kind of allowed me to very comfortably walk back into music and into the whole life of music because I needed a break, I think. I needed just some time, you know. It's been a long time. Like, I've been doing this forever.
did your classmates know who you were? I mean, did you have to endure a whole lot of really lame milkshake jokes? What was that like?
Funny enough, no, I didn't. I think, for me, I think the first thing was just going to school and kind of going to school at that point. I was, 27, 28. So, I mean, I've been out of school for a long time. And so I think that was a little nerve-wracking, just in that alone, just kind of like first day of school. It's like, you know, it's stress. I'm like, will I make friends? You know, it's like very odd. And then, you know, it's different than your first day of school when no one knows who you are. Everyone thinks they know you, and it's sort of just like, you know, I'm actually a real person and I'm standing here. But it was actually totally different. I think the people who did recognize me didn't say anything from the beginning, and those that didn't just didn't have anything to say to begin with. You know, so it was very neutralizing. And I think also, you know, you're in a really horrible uniform and it's like, that's very kind of grounding from the beginning anyway.
Knock you down a peg.
Yes.
I'm Dan Pashman, host of the Sporkful Food Podcast. I'm sitting in for Soundcheck host John Schaefer today. And I'm joined by Kalise, the singer-songwriter whose latest album is titled Food. Let's talk a little bit about some of the similarities and differences between creating music and creating food.
You know, I hadn't had to think about it really until obviously recently, and people were, because I mean, you know, they were just two things that I always do. But I think what I've come up with is that I think music is, you have to be extremely I think if you want to be any good, you have to be extremely prepared to kind of dig into your past, think about how that pertains to your present, and sort of then be a visionary about your future. And I think you have to be kind of very aware, full spectrum, and then prepared to be honest enough to write it. You know, whereas I think with food, I think it's very present. You know, it's very much, I don't have to think about anything other than like where I'm at right now. And I think that for me is extremely therapeutic. And although you're pulling from stuff kind of, you know, in your past and all over the place, you don't, it kind of, it's a very instinctual, very, the other thing about food, which is great, is that you can be right, which I love. I love the fact that you can actually be right. I'm like, I really enjoy that.
Right. I tasted this. It was good. Therefore, I'm right.
Yeah, it's right. You know, there's a right and wrong answer. And, you know, there's a lot of room within that. But it's like you can totally jack something up and there's no way to salvage or justify it. Like, that is bad.
You talked about the importance of being able to be honest with yourself in music. Was there something, some part of this album or a song or a lyric where that was a struggle for you?
I think I'm kind of an open book, and I feel like I've always been that way. You know, it depends on where I'm at in my life and kind of what that honesty, you know, is going to be. But I feel like I'm pretty, I've always been really vocal about who I am and sort of how I see things. And so I just think it's always a process. You know, the older we get and kind of the more aware of ourselves we become, it is just sort of digging in for who I am right now, and that kind of wanting it to reign more than anything else, you know.
It's interesting because I feel like there's sort of two parts, roughly speaking, of the creative process. There's the kind of the inspiration, and then there's the implementation, actually taking the concept, turning it into a song or an entree.
Right.
And you've talked about, as you sort of just said, that you've always kind of created music in the moment. You don't plan out an album 3 years in advance. It's a representation of what's inside of you at the moment that you create it. And that's where the inspiration comes from. And then I saw your first cooking channel show, Saucy and Sweet.
Yeah.
And in that show, you cook shrimp fricassee, mm-hmm. and you put strawberries in it,
yeah.
which I thought was very clever and interesting. And I was like, that is great. And you sort of, it seemed like that came from a similar place of sort of like, well, in this moment, I have strawberries. I'm going to put them in. But when it came time for the implementation of that vision, I was interested to see that you were very precise. You knew exactly what you wanted. You even kind of jokingly chastised your friend that you're cooking with because she didn't slice the strawberries correctly the way you wanted.
Right.
When it comes time to implement a musical vision, do you kind of get into that similar mode?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much my personality across the board. I am very, I think I always sort of look kind of like, you know, free spirit, all, you know, all over the place from the outside. But I think people who do get to know me really see that, like, there is an element of that for sure, which is what makes me kind of like able to draw from so many different things. But I think that I'm very clear about what the idea is. And, you know, I can't really predict how it's going to come out, but I know exactly what it takes to make it. Do you know what I mean? And so it's kind of like, I think I'm probably even more precise with food, but you know, I think it is because there is a right or wrong answer, which is less so with music. But yeah, I definitely, you know, I've been with music and with food, I've been trained. I take it seriously. And I think, you know, not that you have to be, but that I do, I enjoy it so much. Like, I want to know the right way. And so I am classically trained, you know, musically, and I am classically trained as a chef. And so I've got that. That's my foundation. So then I can kind of go buck wild and sort of do, because I know how to do this, you know. And if ever challenged, I'm like, I can do this exactly as you would like it done, but I'm like, I'm going to do this my way, which kind of, you know, that's the fun twist to it.
Right. So you kind of find that middle point between the loosey-goosey vision and the precision.
Yeah.
I'm Dan Pashman, host of the Sporkful Food Podcast, sitting in today for Soundcheck host John Schaefer. And I'm joined by Khalees, the singer-songwriter whose latest album is titled Food. You grew up in Harlem. As you mentioned, you're from the New York area. I know your father was a musician and a music professor. You mentioned that your mother was a caterer. So mm-hmm. I think it's sort of interesting. It seems like there's a lot of, I mean, we're all a product of our parents, but it seems like there's a lot of your parents in this album in particular.
For sure.
Because of the food theme and because there is a retro vibe to it to some extent, of a sort of a classic soul funk 60s, 70s kind of thing, which I would imagine was probably music that your parents listened to when they were coming of age. Is that something that was conscious?
Well, you know, it's funny. I have three sisters, and I'm sort of a middle child. Not really, because my two older sisters are so much older, but they were out of the house by the time I noticed. But I am a middle child. And, you know, my name is actually half of my mom's name and half of my dad's name. You know, people always say, what's in a name? And I just think it's kind of funny because my three sisters are actually all doctors of some sort. And I obviously am not. And so, you know, I think it's just, it's kind of funny that, like, I literally am so split, and I always have been, down the center between, you know, my mom and my dad. I look just like my mom, but I'm, you know, tall and sort of same complexion as my dad. Like, it's just literally everything about me is half and half. So I just sort of, I guess, if I acknowledge who I am, honestly, this is what it sounds like.
Right. And you have a four-year-old son now as well. Yeah, I have a three-and-a-half-year-old.
Oh, they're fun.
Yeah. You cook with him?
All the time. Yeah, he always wants to cook. He's like, Mom, I'm a good cooker, right? Yes, you are.
Yeah. My daughter loves to chop things. I got to give her a plastic knife.
Yeah.
But it takes her about half an hour to cut one pepper, but her busy, and then she eats half of it.
Yeah.
One more question for you. You recently did a Reddit AMA, Ask Me Anything, where you take questions from all far-flung corners of the internet, and you got a lot of cooking-related questions. One was, which kitchen utensil would you be? And you said a cast iron skillet, which I love that answer. What are the most important things to know about a cast iron skillet for those who are hoping to have a long-term relationship with one?
Ah, well, first of all, they don't need soap. That's the first thing.
Okay.
And I mean, you know, you can't, there's no fear allowed with a cast iron skillet. They get extraordinarily hot all around. There's no, like, you know, convenient rubber handle or anything. But I just love them. I feel like they're the most versatile and, like, you know, I do all my sauces in them and I bake in them. You can do, like, desserts, you can do savory, you can just pretty much do anything. And I just feel like, you know, it's kind of like a wok in the sense that, like, you can cure it. And so it really, the older it gets, really the better it gets. So treat it well.
And if you're a cast iron skillet?
Well, I'm serious business. I'm heavy. I'm hot. And I get better with age.
All right. Excellent. Well, Kalise, the new album is Food. Thank you so much for joining us on Soundcheck.
Thank you for having me. It's great.
I'm Dan Pashman, host of the Sporkful Food Podcast, which you're welcome to check out at sporkful.com. And it's been a great time here sitting in for John Schaefer at Soundcheck. Let's hear Kalise and her band play one more song here in the Soundcheck studio. And yes, it has an edible title. This one is called Jerk Ribs. This is Kalise, live on Soundcheck.
And my eardrum reminds me, this language starts way down in my feet, and these moments move like the breeze. You can't control something that's getting free. Roll.
That's Khalees and her band in the Soundcheck studio with the song Jerk Ribs from her brand new album called Food. Thanks to Dan Pashman from the Sporkful podcast for sitting in, and to Khalees for bringing her band in for this live session. I'm Soundcheck producer Joel Meyer, sitting in for John Schaefer this week. Up next on the show, we've got even more from the most relaxing playlist of all time. This is Soundcheck. Relax, don't do it when you want to go do it. Relax, don't do it. This is Soundcheck. I'm Joel Meyer in for John Schaefer. This week, we've been building a gigantic Spotify playlist called simply The Most Relaxing Playlist Ever. It's a bold declaration, most relaxing ever, but we're confident that because it came from you, Soundcheck listeners, that it's the definitive ever, period, end of story. It's time to highlight some of our favorites. Now, you can read my complete top 10 list drawn from your submissions on soundcheck.org, but right now, let's sample a few of them, and I warn you, this stuff is very, very relaxing. First up, The Monsters of Relaxation. This is not a band. This is a category I have invented to include some of your most frequently suggested artists. It includes Vivaldi, the R&B singer Sade, and the indie folk band Iron and Wine. But the name that kept coming up was Brian Eno. Yes, the composer, musician, producer, and pioneer of ambient music just has a way with calming our nerves. Steve from Toronto, Gabrielle, James from Brooklyn, JVM from Mamaroneck, they were just a few of the people who picked works by Brian Eno. Michael from Seacliff, New York wrote, "Brian Eno's Ambient One, Music for Airports, is guaranteed to lower my blood pressure. Number one choice." That's just a bit of Brian Eno's Ambient One, subtitled Music for Airports, picked by many of you for our most relaxing playlist ever. By the way, you can listen to that full playlist, it's several hours long, on soundcheck.org. Some of you couldn't limit yourself to just one pick, which is fine, but our listener Steve chimed in with basically his own 22-song playlist. It's ready for your next low-impact cocktail party. Steve's playlist features relaxing stuff from Pink Floyd, Roxy Music, The Eurythmics, and this band, Lush. Here's Sunbathing.
Hi, my name is Josh. I'm from Portland, Maine. I'm calling in regards to the most relaxing playlist ever, and I would like to suggest the song Else by Built to Spill. Thank you. I enjoy your show a lot. Bye.
That's the song Else from Built to Spill from their album Keep It Like a Secret. Our listener Josh in Portland, Maine picked it for our most relaxing playlist ever. I'm Joel Meyer in today for John Schaefer, reviewing some favorite submissions to our most relaxing playlist ever, as picked by the Soundcheck staff. You can read a top 10 list of our favorite listener submissions on soundcheck.org. As I mentioned before, Brian Eno was an artist who was named frequently, but one song that was mentioned over and over was, drumroll please,
Sailing to my name is Eric Locke. I believe one of the most relaxing songs is Christopher Cross's Sailing. You can't stop sailing. Thanks. Bye-bye.
I love Eric's statement there. You can't stop sailing. It has so many layers, so many meanings, as in, this smash soft rock hit by Christopher Cross can't be stopped. Or does it mean that Eric is addicted to actual sailing and literally cannot get off his yacht? Either way, a lot of you picked Sailing as your most relaxing song ever, including Jeannie from Massapequa, Joe from NYC, and Daniel from New York. Here's what Perry in New York City wrote on our website. The winner, hands down, is Sailing by Christopher Cross. To me, it's akin to watching golf on television on a Sunday afternoon after a big meal. Nothing cool about it, but it does the trick. It is the Ambien of songs, and it knows it. You can read more of our favorite songs submitted by our Soundcheck listeners to the most relaxing playlist ever, and you can listen to the playlist itself all on soundcheck.org. Let's hear one more in-studio performance from today's musical guest, the R&B singer Khalees, from her album Food. This is called Rumble. It's Khalees and her band live in the Soundcheck studio.
It's a strange thing to have you back in my face when all these years pass. I guess I just got used to my space. I don't know how to feel. This whole thing seems so surreal. So you keep one foot out the door. I know I said leave, but baby, don't go. We got so much history. I heard you. No, we don't need therapy. What I need is you to leave. And even though I know I'm right, just like some lapse in my memory, you're back to me. Hand on the door, I wanna yell, baby.
That's Khalees, live in the Soundcheck studio with a song called Rumble. Her new album is called Food. You can find out more about it, download the podcast of this segment, and dig through our archives at soundcheck.org. John Schaefer's out this week, so tomorrow on the show, I'll talk with the Peruvian-born, San Francisco-based author Daniel Alarcón. He ended up on a lot of best of 2013 lists with his book At Night We Walk in Circles. He joins us with a pick three playlist of his favorite tracks. And live music from the Holmes Brothers. Made up of two brothers and a so-called brother in spirit, the Virginia Trio joins us with live music from their soulful, bluesy new album called Brotherhood. That does it for the show today. For John Schaefer, I'm Joel Meyer. This is Soundcheck.